Lots of products get pitched to consumers as ways to slow down or even reverse the aging process, which sounds great, except for that one little detail that humans have been looking for a fountain of youth for a long time and have not truly found one yet. But there is something to explore here, something in the realm of molecular biology where drugs and creams and lotions work on the body's cells. Our next guests are in the field and have done some research into substances that may bear some credit for at least slowing the aging process. Carlina Levy is in the studio with me. She is from the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio and is upcoming as an affiliate professor at Southern Oregon University. Carlina, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thank you.
Dave Sharp is on the line from Texas, where he also works at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
Is it easier, I would ask you, Dave, to understand at the molecular level how we break down as we age?
So a lot of people think that what starts happening is there's a lot of what's called oxidative damage. That means that some of the proteins and other macromolecules in the body start breaking down, and we lose some of the ability to repair those. And so it's a slow process of breaking down those macro molecular machines that make our cells run. And so one of the goals of aging studies is to slow that down and lead to what we like to think of as a healthier life rather than an older life.
When you talk about oxidation, I mean, I'm aware of the fact that the rust is an oxidation process as well. I mean,
yeah.
Do humans rust? Is that what's going on there?
Yeah, mitochondria make these reactive oxygen species, and there are systems in the cells to deactivate those, but sometimes there's more than others, and so, our ability to break them down becomes less and less.
Carlina Levy, in general, I mean, we are doing some things right, aren't we? Life expectancy has improved in the last few decades, hasn't it?
That's right. So a big issue for aging research now is people are getting to those older ages. So for a very long time, it was infectious diseases that was the number one cause of mortality. So as you get rid of deaths due to bacterial infections and then some viral infections that ramp through the population because of vaccination, for example, then people actually get to those later stages where age-related diseases come into play.
I noticed that a lot of your research deals with cancer. So is the issue that we are living long enough now to get cancer?
That is one issue. So there are definitely environmentally caused cancers. The most common one that everybody knows about is smoking or other exposures via inhalation. So obviously lung cancer, prevalence is an environmental concern. But clearly there are cancers that show up due to age. Humans are actually fortunate. We don't get as much cancer as rodents, for example, mice. But unfortunately, shall you live long enough, it is very likely that a tumor will be found, even if that's not your cause of death.
Which segues directly into our discussing about some of the tests that go on. I noticed that the tests that at the National Institute of Aging are done on mice. And I also noticed that the NIA, an original version of it, was created within a division of chemotherapy at the National Institutes of Health. So this whole aging and cancer thing is very intricately tied together.
Yeah, so Dave can speak to this as well, but the project that I joined Dave Sharp's lab to run was actually specifically looking at the anti-cancer effects of rapamycin after this molecule was found to extend lifespan in mice. So, and we're very careful, Dave and I, to explicitly say, mice are not humans. So mice really like rapamycin and live a very long time on rapamycin, live much longer than expected, but they're mice. They're not humans. And there are clearly a lot of differences between humans and mice. And so that's really important to reiterate.
We're talking about aging processes in the human body and some promise shown in research for things that may slow that down. And again, though, we're talking about mice generally and not humans at this point. Carolina Levy and Dave Sharp both come from the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. Carolina is an affiliate professor at Southern Oregon University as well. You can join the conversation on the exchange. You may have many questions about claims made about anti-aging products, and perhaps we can field some of those at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So rapamycin, Dave Sharp, can you give us the thumbnail sketch on what that is?
Oh, yeah. So this is a very interesting drug. It was discovered in Canada in the 1970s, and it was originally described as an antifungal. It's an antibiotic-like molecule, and bacteria make it in the soil to compete with other kinds of organisms, and it turns out that later on it was discovered that it would slow down the growth of cancer cells. And eventually, through work from Michael Hall, he discovered that the target of rapamycin is a very important protein in the cells and our cells, and also the cells is like yeast and other flies and worms. So it's universally conserved in most living organisms. And the job of the target of rapamycin, which we abbreviate by calling it TOR, is to respond to various stimuli in the environment that impinge upon cells. And some of those stimuli include one very important one called nutrients, a food. So when we eat food, our cells recognize the presence of food through the TOR system. And also in multicellular organisms like us, this system also responds to growth factors. So like you probably heard of growth hormone is like one example. So what TOR does, it balances the availability of nutrients with other signaling that's coming to the cells to tell them whether to grow or not grow. Now, in the terms of cancer cells, which y'all been talking about, they have a really activated growth, it's called anabolic addiction to the TOR system. And so if we, what rapamycin does is it inhibits in a way that is similar to diet restriction. It inhibits the TOR system, and if you're inhibiting the TOR system, then you're also inhibiting the growth of cells. And so Carolina and I, studies have shown that if you start rapamycin early in life, you can prevent and delay several of the different kinds of cancers that mice get. And the current effort is to now translate that into humans.
So Carolina Levy, I mean, do you have protocols that you're thinking about? I'm granted, it sounds like you're still far away from human studies, but are you thinking about ways in which rapamycin would be dosed, how often, how much, stuff like that?
That's a very important question. The big problem that the intervention testing program solved, and this is Randy Strong's main, a huge contribution from Randy Strong, is right now rapamycin was given as a free drug. One thing important to say about the TOR system is, you diet restrict or you fast every day, right? So at night you don't eat. So that's the fasting period. So break, fast, breakfast, right? So the idea here is that you have these cycles of mTOR, which are important for cellular function. And usually if you give rapamycin as a drug, you basically will allow TOR to be activated when the drug is not around, and then it will be inhibited when the drug is around. And you can imagine that then cancer cells can have a moment of escape when the drug is not around. The solution that was developed for ITP was developed for a different reason. The problem is when they set up these studies, they're very expensive. And just the cost of the drug to give to these mice, because a lot of the drug was digested in the stomach, was going to make the project cost prohibitive. Instead, Randy figured out there was a molecule called Udrajit. It's basically an encapsulating molecule. And if you put rapamycin into it, then it survives the stomach and you can use much less of the drug, making this study cost effective. The side effect of that was you had drug in the system all the time. So you got basically much more constant levels. And that appeared to be essential for the effects of rapamycin. So this, there's still a lot of details to be worked out, but clearly this E-RAPA, we call it, so encapsulated rapamycin, has properties that are different from free rapamycin or what are called rapalogs, which are modified molecules produced by several pharmaceutical companies. So the idea here is this opens a brand new avenue, because all that we know about rapamycin effects are really based on traditional formulations in humans. Rapamycin has been used in humans, in patients, for many years. But the point is now it's not just rapamycin. It's rapamycin where you can control the dosing and the amount available throughout much more tightly.
Rapamycin has become the central figure in our conversation here as we talk about molecular biology and anti-aging intervention with Carlina Levy and Dave Sharp from the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. Carlina is here in the studio because she's also an affiliate professor at Southern Oregon University. Questions or comments from you are welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Dave Sharp, something in the name of the source of rapamycin led me to believe it's got some relationship with strep. Is that right?
The bug that makes it is called Cystomyces hygroscopicus. That's the only relationship I know about.
All right, so it's not like the strep that gives you a sore throat and all that stuff. All right.
It was discovered in soil from Easter Island, and it got its name because the natives called that island Rapa Nui. And so
yes.
When the chemist discovered it, they named it rapamycin.
There's a
plaque there on Easter Island commemorating the discovery of this drug by White, the drug company.
So Carlina Levy, I want to come back to what you talked about when you were being careful to say these are experiments with mice in these applications of rapamycin. I mean, how much longer, how greater a percentage of life did they get in the laboratory?
Quite a bit, but I need to tie it back to the diet restriction, because, in fact, diet restriction extends lifespan in mice, and it's by 25% to 30% life extension. One big thing about the diet restriction intervention is it had to be started relatively early. Rapamycin achieves very similar life extension ranges, between 30% and 40%. And these are published. This is at a single, and now it's been done at multiple doses. And it's been really surprising. You see, when Dave proposed this, people said, "You're crazy. You're going to kill all the mice because it's a, you know, immune suppressant drug.
Right.
You're going to destroy their immune system. Mm-hmm. They're all going to die like flies. What are you thinking? You know, you're nuts." But they agreed to do it. And now, Dave, you'll have to tell me exactly the current dose, but they're at three times the original dose. And the mice are still living longer. Now, I must say, female mice live longer than male mice on the drug. What I mean is rapamycin works better for females than on males. Hmm. We think it's estrogen related, but we're not sure. And I'll let Dave elaborate.
No, that we don't know any more about that, Carolina, right now, why that is. In our current studies, we're also able to show that the drug is equally effective in cancer models in males and females. So that's holding up only for lifespan studies.
So, Carlina, when you talk about a diet restriction, what kind of diet restriction are you talking about here for the for these mice?
Yeah, so in mice, what they do is they put food into the hamper a certain amount, so they weigh it, and then they let the mice eat for a certain amount of time. They take the leftovers out and weigh it again. So basically that's called ad libitum, which means as much as you want, okay? And that sets the how much the baseline is. And then you restrict that by about 30%, 30 to 40%. And then you only feed them a restricted diet, and that is what we call diet restriction.
So that diet restriction in combination with the rapamycin?
No. Just one or the other. It's
really?
Very so remember Dave talked about TOR being nutrient sensing?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So basically there are two ways to inhibit TOR. One is by putting less nutrients into your environment or fewer growth factors into your environment. And then the second way is to actually molecularly inhibit it. So, by the way, the diet restriction findings where that extended lifespan is what led Dave to propose rapamycin as a life-extending intervention. So this is all tightly interconnected.
In the minute we have left, go ahead, Dave.
There's also a third way you can extend lifespan, and that's limiting growth factors. And I mentioned growth hormones.
Uh-huh.
So mice that are restricted in growth hormones are dwarfs, and they also live a very long time. So there's also genetic ways that you can extend lifespan.
All right. So just a few seconds left now, really, Carlina. I mean, you have to be really careful, I'm sure, as a molecular biologist to not put things out there and say, hey, look, you know, we can make you live this much longer. And so what do you make as you look at the way that things are pitched to consumers in this way?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about the many different diet recommendations, especially ketogenic diet, which has side effects. And instead, I recommend people look at intermittent fasting or other basically healthy lifestyle modalities, such as eat a little bit less and eat healthier. And that seems to be the answer.
Doesn't it, though? And it's interesting, too, because I'm sure we'll end up talking about at some point about the study I just read about this morning that indicated that we love our fats and our carbohydrates together, and they're not good for us. So much more to talk about molecular biology down the road. Carlina Levy and Dave Sharper at the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio. Carlina is an affiliate professor at Southern Oregon University. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.